This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm excited today to be joined by Dr. Ruben Mesa. Dr. Mesa is the Executive Director of the Mays Cancer Center at UT San Antonio, MD Anderson. He's a great leader in oncology care. He spent a long part of his career at the Mayo Clinic and just a remarkable career. Dr. Mesa, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today. But as you mentioned, I'm the executive director at the Mays Cancer Center at UT Health San Antonio MD Anderson. And I've been a career-focused hematologist focusing on new drug development for chronic leukemias and myeloproliferative neoplasms, and have enjoyed roles both at the Mayo Clinic and now leading the NCI-designated cancer center in San Antonio.
And being a professor at Mayo Clinic, I mean, that's sort of the height of academics in healthcare. And then obviously affiliated with MD Anderson now and running the cancer oncology center there, remarkable. Take a moment and talk to us about current evolutions on oncology treatment. What are you seeing? Is there hope? How quickly are things moving in the right direction? Give us a sense of what's going on in oncology care.
Well, this has really been a very rewarding time to be a cancer researcher and someone involved in cancer care. And even during my career, I've really seen that advance to a tremendous degree. You know, I'd say there's several key areas that have really transformed what we're doing and why we're making such an impact on cancer. First, I think we're understanding cancer much better than we ever did before. And that's the topic that we would call precision oncology, meaning we long have learned that, you know, a cancer can be very different in different individuals. And we've learned that that's both because of the genetic changes that occur in the individual cancers that might make one lung cancer very different than lung cancer in another individual, as well as all of the factors for that individual, their culture, their biology, their genetics, their family history, all factoring into what cancer they might develop, how they respond to therapy, all of these parts. So that's making an enormous part as we really try to individualize cancer diagnosis, screening, and treatment. The second is the impact of targeted medical treatments for cancer. You know, if there's anything out there that has a bad reputation is, quote, chemotherapy. You know, although still very helpful in many circumstances, the drugs we've used in the past that were nonspecific killers of cancer cells are drugs that harmed the body as well as had an impact on the cancer. Many drugs, and some of the drugs that I have been involved with, have really been at the forefront of targeted medical treatments. Medicines like imatinib for chronic myeloid leukemia, or ruxolitinib for JAK2 mutated diseases like myelofibrosis or polycythemia vera, where specific chemicals were designed to turn off some of the cancer signals that can develop in cancer cells and lead these diseases to either become dormant or to be cured. Finally, one of the most exciting things is how the cancer field has better learned to harness the power of the immune system to treat cancer. The immune system is one of our most effective things that we have in life, and indeed something that is we're all very much aware of as it relates to this COVID pandemic, our ability to fight viruses, develop vaccines, immunity. Indeed, there's never been an area of greater awareness around the importance of our immune system. But in cancer, two crucial things. One, revving the immune system to more effectively battle cancer through the revolution that have been the checkpoint inhibitors and medicines that impact immuno-oncology. And then second, the ability to target T T cells of the immune system through CAR T therapy against cancers is both having a big impact on the blood cancers, but many other cancers we think in the future. So a very, very exciting time, but I share with my patients, we've gone through a revolution of an era where we had these non-specific therapies that we gave to everybody across the board who had a particular disease. And now we have very targeted approaches based on the individual that use both targeted therapies and immune-based therapies to try to treat their cancer.
Thank you. So much more movement towards precision medicine, targeted therapies, immunotherapy, and even vaccines you see in some places. Take a moment on contrasting. The two biggest killers of Americans are heart disease and cancer. And I think heart disease more each year than cancer, but it each in the 600,000 to a million a year range. Are similar advances being made? I know it's not your area of expertise as much as oncology is, but are similar advances being made on the cardiovascular side or not so much so?
I think yes. You know, I think that there have been tremendous advances made in our care of cardiac disease, which is you know, I think we've made a big impact on both. And we've learned that there's areas of overlap. You know, they overlap in the science of aging. There's a lot of research both in my institution and others in terms of how we age and why that impacts both our cells that can lead to cancer, but also can injure our cardiovascular system. We've learned that certain things like tobacco historically had been very detrimental for causing both of those conditions, and that the all of the efforts to decrease dependency on tobacco have helped in the U.S. to a significant degree, but that a new risk is soon superseding the risks that we had had from tobacco, and that is the risks that come with obesity, diet, and what we say energy balance, meaning exercise, diet, and obesity. Indeed, the National Cancer Institute is recognizing that obesity and issues of energy balance are probably going to be more important in terms of risk of developing many of the types of cancers we get than even the impact of tobacco. And that can be in colon cancer, it can be in breast cancer, it can be in leukemia. And in South Texas, we have recognized that also might lead to a disproportionate risk in cancers we're seeing increasingly more commonly, such as liver cancer.
And so to take that a step further, in terms of tobacco bad, smoking bad, and we've all gotten this education in the last year about aging, obesity, and the impact on immune systems. Because of COVID. I mean, I don't think many of us really understood how much weaker our immune systems get as we get into our 70s, 80s, and 90s versus in our 20s, 30s, 40s, or what have you. But we've already gotten that education on obesity, aging really impacts the immune system, which can have impacts for cancer, COVID, heart disease, and everything else. Is that the case?
I'd say we're learning that it's all connected to a very significant degree. Indeed, these things can create in the body a state of imbalance. They can create chronic inflammation. They can make our bodies have more of an environment for both developing cancer, but also potentially being more susceptible to diseases like infections, you know, and that although age is a factor, the level of fitness of an individual is equally, if not more important. So, you know, very, very important. And many of these things that we are able to impact, you know, are very important. Indeed, although there are things like family history that we inherit, you know, there are things that we can choose an impact that really can help to protect us, both in terms of what we eat, as well as the exercise and activity that we have, as well as trying to maintain a healthy weight. You know, all of these things have major implications for our health, both in cancer, avoiding communicable diseases, something much more on our radar now, as well as cardiovascular disease.
And so a question for you. You know, I walk all day, play some sports, get a lot of exercise. Our producer does a ton of yoga and lots of other sports as well. Does that mean that me personally, I could eat as much as I want tonight because I'm keeping it in balance through my walking and my exercise and other sports? Or do I still have to be careful with diet as well?
What we found is that both the energy balance, meaning, you know, how many calories are coming in and how many are you using, is important, but also what you're eating is important. Indeed, you know, the balance, you know, we frequently relate that the simplest model of a healthy diet is the Mediterranean diet, a diet with plenty of fish, a diet that has meat, but clearly in moderation. Usually much less meat than we have traditionally eaten as part of our diet. Many fruits, vegetables, grains, fresh fruits, few in processed foods with chemicals and things of that nature. Maybe the occasional glass of red wine. You know, all of these sorts of things, the balance, what we're eating, natural products, natural vitamins, all have very important parts in our health. Indeed, one thing that we have found as part of COVID, but I think it's relevant in cancer as well, is, again, there were individuals whose diet primarily consists of carbohydrates and fats, you know, pastas, pizzas, etc., but that's primarily what they're eating. And they were both more likely to develop COVID, and it was much more likely to be severe. They were in the strange circumstance that in some ways their body was starving for essential nutrients, even though they had too many calories. You know, so as the COVID evolved, again, you know, there was discussion of individuals lacking many of the nutrients or micronutrients necessary for a healthy immune system, even though they were obese.
They're not getting the right food.
That is right. Exactly,
so you're not going to give me a pass on eating horribly to balance out my exercise. I have to eat right as well. Let me ask you a different, another question about the May Center. Talk about the May Center for a moment and a few points of pride that you have in the May Center.
So, yeah. It really has been the great honor of my career to be able to lead this wonderful center. It's been a cancer center since 1974 and had started as a cancer therapy research center and had really grown to have a tremendous impact internationally because of its role in developing new cancer therapies. In fact, over 20 of the cancer therapies we use every day were first developed there as part of our Phase One drug programming, the Institute for Drug Development, one of the earliest and most impactful areas for developing new therapies. And second, for our leadership in breast cancer, we developed and made several of the key observations in breast cancer and early breast cancer therapy and developed the world's largest breast cancer meeting, the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, which continues on to this day. I'm deeply proud of those efforts that have continued forward, but several other key things. First, we are deeply committed to advancing the science of cancer in Latinos. We are the academic cancer center and NCI-designated cancer center for San Antonio and South Texas. And we care for a region of over almost 5 million people, of which almost 70% are Latinos. So we're in a unique position to better advance the understanding of the drivers of cancer in these populations, help to better improve cancer prevention and screening, and develop new therapies. We have well over 50% of the patients who go on to our cancer clinical trials are Latinos. And because of this, we're able to uniquely inform the cancer community regarding the safety and effectiveness of new cancer therapy for Latino patients. Second, we're really deeply committed to the people of San Antonio and South Texas, better understanding the cancer burden that they face. How do we help to prevent and screen that? How have we've worked to reinvigorate cancer screening after many have left that go by the wayside in the light of COVID? We are deeply committed to understanding the drivers of health disparities, some of which really have been very exemplified during the COVID crisis, how health disparities in terms of access, in terms of testing, in terms of access to medications, and in terms of the comorbidities that these populations can face in terms of that decreased kidney function, liver dysfunction, obesity, all can really impact their health. So many important areas of focus. We are very proud to try to play a role in the health and wellness for the people of San Antonio, South Texas.
So you, Dr. Mesa, have a great gift for teaching and clarifying concepts, very gifted. You had a remarkable career between being a professor at Mayo Clinic and now sort of the dream job of running one of the great cancer centers in America, and this magnificent work of trying to really study how things impact our Latino population, and magnificent work, particularly in this era of precision medicine, targeted therapies, and so forth, and this great understanding that different drugs metabolize in different people very differently and have different impacts. So, magnificent career. Take a moment and share what advice you would give to a young physician or a young leader trying to have a great career. What would you tell them?
I would tell them that it is crucial to have a clear sense of the mission that you're trying to achieve, and then having the work that you're doing, you know, line up in a way that makes sense. You know, if your mission is to decrease the burden of cancer in your community, or if your mission is to improve the outcomes for people that have lung cancer, or to decrease the number of women that develop cervical cancer, whatever that is, really look at that goal from a 360-degree view. Who do you need to collaborate with to try to achieve that goal? How do you connect with the patients who have that disease to better understand it? How do you leverage the opportunities at your institution in terms of specialists, in terms of trial capabilities, in terms of collaborating with the scientists, both at your institution and external, who might help you to achieve that goal? You know, we make a difference in health by working as a team. You know, I often say that cancer is the ultimate team sport. We only make a difference by working together as a team, and to always remember that our patients are a crucial part of that team. So many of the efforts that I've been involved with, some of the things that have been the most rewarding, is the opportunity to really work directly with patients and fellow clinical colleagues and our laboratory scientists all together to try to work toward a common goal and mission.
Let me ask you one final question. Remarkable career as a physician, a leader, a professor. Did you ever think about doing something besides what you ended up doing?
So, interestingly, I first started as a nuclear engineer and was interested in fusion research. And, you know, as I've shared with some of my mentees, sometimes you have to be open to opportunities as they develop. While I was pursuing that, a little known thing known as Chernobyl happened, and really has had implications in terms of research in energy development in the nuclear field kind of ever since. So I pivoted and got interested in radiobiology and ended up pursuing a career in medicine and have been enjoyed it greatly and very excited by all the opportunities that I've had. So I looked in that view, but I think I ended up on the right path.
Just a fantastic career, and thank you for all you do. Pleasure to visit you today, Dr. Mesa, on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.